I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. There's a new exhibit at the UBC Museum of Anthropology, Luminescence, the Silver of Peru. It's there until the 16th of December 2012. Joining me now to discuss the installation is its curator, Dr. Anthony Shelton. The exhibition features objects spanning two millennia. I took it in last weekend. You see masks, crowns, altarpieces, jewelry, pins, tweezers, and other silversmith knickknacks that inform Peru's history, as well as showcases the great bounty of silver found in Peru. We'll get Dr. Shelton to tell us about the exhibit, how he came to curate it, what visitors to the museum can expect, and more. Anthony Shelton is a professor in the Department of Anthropology at the University of British Columbia and serves as the director of the Museum of Anthropology. Visit moa.ubc.ca for information on the museum and this exhibit. Please welcome to the Plant on the Line program, Dr. Anthony Shelton. Professor Shelton, good morning.
Hi, good morning.
Thanks for joining us.
A pleasure.
So you've been with UBC since 2004, is that right?
Yeah, this is my, I'm coming up to my eighth year, yeah.
Yeah, have you been the director of the museum since then as well?
I've been director, yeah, during my whole time here at MoA.
Yeah, I'm just curious to know what your day's like. Did you teach full time, or how does that work?
No. I teach. No, most of what I do is kind of concerned with the everyday running of the museum. Like most directors, there's a lot of work that needs to do with kind of outside people, government contacts, university contacts. Sponsors or external advisory board, raising money. We've been setting, you know, kind of strategic goals in terms of, you know, how many exhibitions we do, because for us, having a three-year committed exhibition program is something quite new.
Mm-hmm.
The academic research side on of the museum. So I get to teach. I teach one course every year.
Mm-hmm. Now, I understand that this is the first exhibit that you've curated, right?
It's the first exhibit in Canada I've curated. I've curated various exhibits at the British Museum, other museums in Britain.
And your research work, in your interests, I mean, you have a history of dealing with, say, art history in, history in Latin America. Is that correct?
Yeah, Latin America has been my focus.
Yeah. So the initial question when one hears about this exhibit, knowing nothing about, say, silver or the history of Peru, would ask, what's so special about the silver there?
Well, first of all, metallurgy originated in the Americas in Peru. So the gold and the silver and the copper that you find that was worked as before the first century AD. Which is quite unique. For example, those traditions were never established in Mexico or other parts of Latin America. It was also used from about the first century AD. These metals were used to symbolize political authority. The predominant effect that they wanted to achieve was that of luminescence, hence the title of the exhibition. That certainly among the Inca, the power, political power and political authority of the Inca ruler was said to be derived from the sun, and the Inca ruler himself was said to be descendant of the sun, and his wife was a descendant of the moon. And so the power and the authority invested in them and its relationship to the sun and the moon is symbolized through the use of gold on the one hand in the case of the ruler,
uh-huh,
and silver in the case of his wife. And by extension, gold starts to symbolize masculine domain, and silver the kind of female domain and female authority and female activities.
So in Peru in particular, is there more silver, say, or is that just that they were more skilled at it than other parts?
No, it's not that the techniques for its extraction were known in Peru. And those techniques were never developed in other parts of the Americas. Well, to a degree in Colombia, but for example in Mexico, Central America, it wasn't developed at all, nor in Argentina or Brazil.
Well, we're concerned nowadays about how we extract, say, minerals, chemicals, metals from the environment. The people in Peru, did they do something? I mean, you just mentioned that the methods were different. Environmentally, was it more sound, say?
I don't know if it was more sound environmentally, but it was the scale. No, the scale was much smaller.
I see.
The populations were, you know, very much smaller than they are today. So the environmental impact was consequently a lot less than you find today.
And even today, is silversmithing, is that something that's still world renowned?
It's still world renowned. Silver went into decline in about 1821. Peru was the number one world supplier of silver, and in fact, the whole economy of a lot of South America in the 17th and 18th century revolved around the city of Potosí, which was a center of silver mining and the silver trade. After 1821, I guess there was a dislocation of markets as a result of independence. And it took a while. In fact, it wasn't until the 20th century that silver became important again, and Peru again occupied the position of being the premier country in the world from which silver came. I think it's now second after Mexico.
The one thing that I noticed in going through the exhibit is, and you know, you have stuff there. I mean, from the 9th century, I think, is that right?
The earliest stuff is from the 1st century.
I remember seeing some pieces at near the front of the room. That were from the 9th century, and then it goes up to, you know, recent years. You see sort of the history of the area through these pieces, don't you? You can see the sort of the colonialization that you mentioned in 1821, the independence. That's something that you see in this exhibit clearly. When you walk through the exhibit as a viewer, and sort of the relationship that you have to that you see in these pieces, the text I noticed was interesting, because it's not really the placement of the text is not on the object or on the base of the where it sits, it's on the wall. Was that on purpose?
The exhibition is about it's using silver, but it's really about the idea of silver and changing ideas of silver at different periods of Peruvian history. So, for example, the pre-Columbian period, and you know, the ideas of silver and its luminosity and how that was related to the gods and to political leadership. You know, the kind of regalia and the jewelry that was used, which symbolized the relationship between its wearers and the moon and feminine authority, or beakers, offering dishes, rattles, which were used in rituals to create social relationships or relationships between humans and deities through offerings. It's the quality of light and the reflection of light that we really wanted to emphasize. So everything is grouped in rows, and basically the effect we wanted to generate was when you go into there, because it is on luminescence and in a way secondly on silver, it is on luminescence, and we wanted to present that luminescent effect. We wanted it to be like entering an Aladdin's cave. So the texts are, the contextualizing text is, runs alongside the rows of the rows of cases. And I guess another thing we wanted to achieve was that over the past 15 years, there's been a number of blockbuster exhibitions on the gold of Peru. And so the focus has been on gold and not on silver. And their exhibitions that have traveled New York, Paris, Vienna, they've traveled the world. But there's been no similar exhibitions on silver. And in a way, the discoveries of silver and the collections of silver in national museums in Peru is as great, if not greater, than gold. So what we wanted to do was kind of put a show together which would be a blockbuster, which would be very attractive, which would really kind of focus people's attention on the luminescent qualities of silver rather than the metal per se, and that would be as strong as the shows that have already toured the world on Peruvian gold.
What's the Patronato Plata del Peru?
So that's a foundation, that's a Peruvian foundation that we worked with. And the Patronato was founded about 20 years ago to really encourage and stimulate artists working in silver. They organize conferences every year on silver. They have a competition among silversmiths, which has now grown to incorporate silversmiths from all over Latin America. And prizes are given for the best works. And they also kind of work with organizations like ourselves to on the logistics of putting exhibitions like this together. So they were very, very important. The Patronato were extremely important in a lot of the loans, a lot of the material you see there hasn't left Peru before. Some of it has not been seen in Peru, for example, the two tunics of silver. I mean, these are pieces which I don't think have been illustrated in books, even. You know, I heard there were rumors of their existence of one, and then we discovered two. And in fact, there's three. So actually, for the Peruvian government to lend two out of three was extraordinary.
Yeah.
And I think it was the same with the gold headdresses at the beginning, which are the first three objects you see when we talk about the relations between metals and metaphors. They're three of about five extant gold headdresses in Peru. So again, you know, we were extremely fortunate, and I don't think the public would get the opportunity again for many, many years to see the kind of things that we've been able to gather together with the help of the Patronato and the Peruvian government in this exhibition.
As a curator of all this, were you able to touch some of these items yourself?
Well, it's metal, so you tend to kind of touch them only wearing gloves.
I see. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I should say that the other that the, you know, the second part of the exhibition looks at the colonial period and looks at this you know, the survival of this preoccupation with luminescence and luminescent qualities. So we start not only to look at silver, but we also we look at Cusco school painting. And again, there's not been an exhibition like this in Canada before. And this is also kind of a first opportunity to look at Cusco school of painting, which was 17th, 18th century religious painting done entirely by indigenous people. By and large, copying religious images from engravings, black and white engravings. So the coloring is very much their own. And again, you see the use of gold foil. Mm-hmm. And of silver, and images put against black backgrounds, dark backgrounds. So this luminescence kind of is also there in the colonial period. And then the final section looks at you know, the indigenous uses of silver from 1821 to the present. And again, it's that kind of, you know, that sense of luminescence. You find it, it continues right through the 19th century. To the present, and you find it in carnival costumes, in the dresses that are created for saints and holy images in churches. The use of aluminium paper, silver paper, gold foil, you know, plastics mm-hmm. as part of popular culture. So the exhibition kind of really cuts across fine art, decorative art, ethnography, to look at how this quality of luminescence is a unique quality of Andean aesthetics from, you know, right back to, well, for 2,000 years.
What's that thing with the red eye?
Oh, supai.
Yeah.
So a mask that was done by a contemporary silver maker. And it represents a supayu, is a kind of an earth spirit associated with the riches of the earth. Sometimes he's described as the owner, of the earth's riches, and he's associated in Christian religion with the devil. But he's not the qualities that Andean miners see in him. That he's rather precocious. He's ambiguous. If you're working in the mines, you need to kind of have a contract with him in order for him to protect you while you're working deep in the mines, and to help you find rich veins of metal. If you don't have that kind of contract, he can inflict illnesses. He can move metals, it's believed, from one mountain to another mountain. So he's kind of an ambiguous character. And beliefs in Supe were very, very common, at least up until the 1980s, 1990s, I think, kind of, probably not so strong today, but until fairly recently. As you go into the exhibition from the multiversity side, before you get into the gallery, we have about 19 of these masks of Supai suspended from the ceiling, all dramatically lit. And these are carnival masks in which kind of Supai appears. There's hundreds and hundreds of carnival mask dancers appear in carnival in Puno and Aurora in Bolivia, in which Supai is represented today. They were collected this year, in fact, in the carnival earlier this year.
It's a frightening-looking thing because it's got one red eye and it's bright, bright red.
Yeah.
To the museum as a whole, what do you find visitors, what do they go to when they visit the Museum of Anthropology? Is there something that brings them there?
I think the core of the museum and the heart of the museum has been and always will be Northwest Coast sculpture and art.
Yeah.
But so that's a major attraction to tourists. I mean, we've got one of the world's best collections of Northwest Coast art. The building itself is an iconic building. You know, it's one of the extraordinary pieces of architecture, I think, in Vancouver by Erickson. Erickson referred to it as his favorite building to me at one point.
Yeah.
So the building is important. But, you know, 80% of our collections are from around the world. I think people increasingly come to see those collections. Temporary exhibitions are about world arts and cultures. We've rebranded 2 years ago that the museum is a museum of world arts and cultures with a special focus on the Northwest Coast, but it is world arts and cultures. And I think that's important because, you know, we have over 40,000 objects, as I say, 80% are from Asia, the Pacific, Africa, Europe, and elsewhere. And Canada only has two museums of world arts and cultures. One is the ROM, of course, in Toronto, and the other, the Musée de Civilisation in Quebec. So for West Canada, we are the Museum of World Arts and Cultures.
And this was the first time I went on Friday to the museum. I've lived here my whole life, 30 years. I've never been to the Museum of Anthropology. Mm. But there is something really for everyone there. I mean, there's a ceramics exhibit,
yep,
which is really fascinating. And then you have, of course, the totem poles, and then there's the Bill Reid stuff.
Yeah.
Attendance is good?
Attendance is good. We get about 140,000 people a year.
Yeah.
Which is very, very good, I think. We're a university museum, and you know, we're considered one of the three major visitor attractions here in Vancouver. Worldwide, we have a kind of an international reputation, which is why we could borrow the kind of things we did for this exhibition. And as you said, I mean, we represent cultures from throughout the world. We've got European ceramics. Ceramics are the second most important collection of European ceramics in Canada. We have large Asian collections, Arctic Inuit collections, Latin American collections, African and Pacific Island material. We have the oldest collection of Pacific Island material in Canada.
How long does something like this take to curate luminescence?
Luminescence took 4 years.
Really?
Yeah. And that's about average for a major exhibition.
Yeah, yeah. And then there's also these talks that are being held in conjunction with the exhibit, right?
Yeah, there's a whole series of talks because, again, you know, related to art and culture around silver and what's explored in the exhibition. But also, it's an opportunity to bring researchers in from UBC who have been doing work, in fact, on some of those issues you raised at the beginning, like the environmental impact of mining, and to, you know, to kind of encourage wider discussions about those issues.
And there's a talk, say, here on October 30th about current affairs in Peru. There's a history of mining, as well as you're giving a talk on the 14th of October about making the exhibit, right?
Yeah, I'm giving a talk on, I think it's Sunday, the 14th. I think it's 1 o'clock. The making of this exhibition and the kind of the politics behind putting it together, the ideas, the way the ideas changed over time, the translation of the ideas into a kind of a three-dimensional exhibition. But it will also be about the themes that we explore now and explain where those themes came from, because it is very unusual to do a exhibition that refers to ideas rather than directly to the objects themselves.
Dr. Shelton, it's been a pleasure talking to you. I enjoyed my visit to the museum, and I encourage everyone else to visit the museum and see the Luminescence.
That's great. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. The website is for more, moa.ubc.ca. Luminescence is at the Museum of Anthropology at the University of British Columbia until the 16th of December. The curator of the exhibit and the director of the museum, Dr. Anthony Shelton, on the line from here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Planta.